At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to The End of Innocence. I'm your host, John Young. According to the Warren Commission, on March 31, 1963, Lee Harvey Oswald asked his wife, Marina, to take a photo of him in their backyard. In the image, Oswald is holding a rifle resembling the Mamco Carcano, later found on the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository building. He's also wearing a holstered revolver, similar to the one allegedly used to kill Dallas police officer J.D. Tippit. And he's holding two radical newspapers, The Militant and The Worker. At face value, this photo seems damning. It appears to show Oswald, 7 months before the assassination, proudly posing with both weapons, later tied to two murders. Marina Oswald confirmed to the Warren Commission that she took the photo, lending it a layer of credibility. But when I spoke to Marina one evening at her house in the mid-90s, she told me and other researchers that she did take the photo of Oswald holding the rifle, gun, and newspapers, but she said she took the photo in the alley behind their house, not beside the stairs. She said, quote, Lee was standing at the edge of the alley with a small fence beside him. He was not beside the stairs like the photos show, end quote. Backyard photographs are among the most hotly contested artifacts in the JFK assassination record. These images of the accused assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald, are strikingly peculiar. His clothing, posture, demeanor, and accessories combine in a way that feels off-kilter, almost theatrical. There's something nicely askew in the composition. And it's not just the mystery of the radical newspapers in a quiet domestic yard, or the presence of firearms in a suburban setting, or even the unnatural bend in Oswald's stance. It's the uniformity of it all. The way the elements align too perfectly. The man who would later be accused of two murders is shown holding both alleged murder weapons, while brandishing symbols of his political extremism. It's a taboo that seems tailor-made to suggest motive, means, and ideology in a single frame. That very neatness invites suspicion. The photo feels too good to be true, as if constructed to incriminate rather than to document. Oswald himself claimed that they were forgeries, insisting his face had been superimposed on another body. And the immediate oddness of the images, their visual tension, and narrative convenience lends weight to that possibility. Whether genuine or fabricated, the backyard photos remain a focal point of doubt. They don't just depict a man with weapons, they frame a story. And the question is, who was telling that story?
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting. Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
danger has been blocked out, no one allowed in or out, as the search for this would-be presidential assassin continues in downtown Dallas.
The Dallas Police Department arrested a 24-year-old man, Lee H. Oswald, in connection with the slaying of a Dallas policeman, J.D. Tippit, shortly after President Kennedy was assassinated.
Here comes Oswald down the hall again.
You fire that rifle.
That's as fast as you people have been given, but I emphatically deny these charges.
Did you kill the president?
No, I have not been charged with that. In fact, nobody has said that to me yet. The first thing I heard about it was when the newspaper reporters in the hall asked me that question.
You shoot the president?
I work in that building.
Were you in the building?
Naturally, if I work in that building, yes, sir.
Back up, man.
Did you shoot the president?
No, they're taking me in because of the fact that I'm
in
the building.
What time
is it? I'm just a patsy.
President.
Chief, do you have any concern for the safety of your prisoner?
No. I don't think that the people are trying to take the prisoner away from us.
We went out by Captain Prince. There is the prisoner. There is Leon Oswald.
He's been shot. He's been shot. Lee Oswald has been shot. Well, there's a man with a gun. It's absolute panic. Absolute panic here in the basement of Dallas Police Headquarters. Detectives have their guns drawn. Oswald has been shot. There is no question about it. Oswald has been shot.
Mr. Oswald died at 1:07 our time in the operating room of the gunshot wound which he had received.
Debate over the backyard photographs of Lee Harvey Oswald often falls into entrenched partisan camps. Supporters of the official narrative tend to accept both the authenticity of the images and the story of their creation, viewing them as clear evidence of Oswald's guilt. Critics, on the other hand, highlight visual inconsistencies and contextual anomalies that suggest the photos may be forged composites. This polarized framing, their real versus their fake, has dominated discourse for decades. But in the midst of this binary, many important questions get overlooked. The photographs themselves are strange. The posture, the props, the setting, and the timing all invite deeper scrutiny. Rather than reducing the conversation to a yes or no verdict, a careful review of the photos and their treatment in the official record can help surface the more delicate issues, those that may offer insight into how evidence is constructed, interpreted, and weaponized in high-stakes historical narratives. When the House Select Committee on Assassinations reopened the JFK case in the late 1970s, a panel of photographic experts was tasked with reviewing key visual evidence, including the infamous backyard photos of Lee Harvey Oswald. These images, long considered central to the case against Oswald, were originally recovered during a second search of Ruth and Michael Payne's garage in Irving, Texas, on the afternoon of November 23, 1963, the day after the assassination. During that search, Dallas police discovered two prints, marked 133A and 133B, along with a negative for 133B. These were promptly turned over to the FBI and later reviewed by the Warren Commission, forming part of the official narrative that Oswald had posed with both alleged murder weapons months before the crime. But the story doesn't end there. The HSCA uncovered additional versions of the backyard photos, images that had not been included in the Warren report. Among them was a third photo, labeled 133C, which had never been publicly acknowledged in the original investigation. One print of 133C, known as 133CDs, was provided by the widow of Dallas police officer Roscoe White. Another set, 133A and 133C Stovall, came from Officer Stovall, one of the five detectives who had participated in the original search of the Payne residence. The existence of these two additional prints raises important questions. Why were they omitted from the Warren report? What did they reveal about the chain of custody and the handling of photographic evidence? And how do they affect the credibility of the official narrative? These lesser-known versions of the backyard photos add complexity to an already controversial piece of evidence. Whether they reinforce the case against Oswald or deepen the mystery surrounding it depends on how and by whom they're interpreted. Yet, as we've already explored, the authenticity and implications of these backyard photos remain deeply controversial. The fact that they were found in a second search, not the initial one, raises questions about chain of custody and investigative procedure. Critics argue that the photos are too perfectly incriminating, while defenders point to Marina Oswald's testimony and forensic analysis to affirm their legitimacy.
"6:30. Time's running out for Fritz. He hasn't gotten his confession. He's got another trick up his sleeve. He's got a photo. And the photo is of Lee Harvey Oswald with a rifle. The rifle. Marina didn't get all the photos. There were some negatives. The police found them at Ruth Payne's house."
For Fritz, this is the final piece of evidence that he needs. Not only does he know now that Oswald owned a rifle, he's got a picture of Oswald holding the rifle, and it's the same rifle that they found on the sixth floor of the school depository building. And he puts it in front of Oswald. And Oswald looks down at it. He says, "That's a fake. That's not my face."
And Fritz here was kind of perplexed.
"It looks like you."
Eventually, he got Oswald to admit that it was his face. But he said,
"That's my face, but that is not me."
Oswald says, "I understand photography. I know how these things can be manipulated.
And I know that you can superimpose a face on somebody else's body like that and create a totally different illusion." He said, "I've never seen this photo."
So Fritz reaches into the envelope and he pulls out the original. And he says, "No, this is a blow-up of this picture, and this picture was taken from Marina's house." So even something that's so definitive and for Fritz was such a hard piece of evidence, Oswald simply denies.
This moment, Oswald's confrontation with the backyard photographs is one of the most revealing in the early hours of the investigation. At approximately 6 p.m. on November 23, 1963, just a day after the assassination, Oswald was shown an 8x10 enlargement of the photo, later labeled 133A. Created from negatives recovered earlier that afternoon. His reaction was immediate and undeniable. He rejected the image as a fake, claiming, quote, "Somebody has superimposed my face on that picture," end quote. When presented with the second photograph, 133B, Oswald dismissed it as merely a smaller version of the same doctored image. He went further, accusing the Dallas police of fabricating the photograph, and refused to discuss it further without legal counsel. Notably, Oswald asserted that he was familiar with photographic techniques and promised that, given time, he could demonstrate how the image had been manipulated. This exchange adds a layer of complexity to an already controversial backyard photo. Oswald's insistence that the image were forged and his confidence in being able to prove it has fueled decades of skepticism. Whether his claim was a desperate denial or a valid challenge to the evidence remains one of the most enduring questions in the case. At the same time, backyard photographs were being processed and enlarged. Their content was already making its way into the press. The Dallas police, under intense scrutiny and public pressure, were eager to demonstrate that their suspect, Lee Harvey Oswald, was not just a person of interest, but the assassin of President John F. Kennedy. During a press scrum on November 23rd, Police Chief Jesse Curry attempted to highlight another major breakthrough the discovery of the Klein's Sporting Goods order letter, which linked Oswald to the mail-order rifle allegedly used in the assassination. But reporters were more interested in the newly uncovered photographs. The image of Oswald posing with a rifle and revolver, both tied to the murders of Kennedy and Officer Tippit, was explosive. It offered a visual narrative that seemed to confirm guilt, motive, and ideology in a single frame. Here's the press asking Police Chief Jesse Curry about the backyard photo.
Could you tell us any more about the snapshots that were found in his Irving, Texas home, showing him holding a gun that looks like the rifle that was used in the assassination?
No, sir. I told you all I could about it last night.
You feel that there should be legislation, national legislation, to stop the selling of guns by mail order? Or
I don't wish to comment on it this time.
We don't know where those pictures were made, do we?
No, we haven't established that yet.
Was he showing them to his wife, or was she in the picture?
No, she wasn't in the picture. I don't know about all of the pictures. I've just looked at one print.
And it was just the rifle.
Did it have a date on the back of it, Chief?
Sir?
Did it have a date on the back of it, as some commercial films do?
No, I didn't see it. In fact, I didn't see the ones we got. I looked at an 8x10 blow-up. That we
The one showing him with the rifle, and does that show him with a pistol also?
Yes.
On a carpet.
Well, I didn't notice the carpet badge. It's in a holster.
It's in a holster.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Does he have any kind of uniform on or anything that
No. If I recall, he was just dressed in black, wasn't he?
Black.
Black trousers.
Black
T-shirt.
I don't recall what type of shirt he had on.
Any hat?
No, he's bareheaded.
Does the background look like anything that might...
We think it might have been, but there's no way of knowing this is true, but we think it might have been in New Orleans. We will attempt to find out about that.
Any idea who shot that picture?
No, sir.
Are you trying to find out?
Is that a negative?
I don't know.
Negative?
What I saw was an 8x10 blow-up. Now, I think we've got some negatives in homicide office, but I haven't examined those.
You think we'll ever be able to see those before the evidence is presented to the grand jury?
I don't know.
So there was a report that in the photograph that you have of the man with the gun and the pistol, that there was also some literature of some sort, or something like a newspaper.
It looked like two small newspapers folded up.
Yes.
One of them said The Worker, and the other one said, I don't know whether the other was a headline on there or whether that was the name of the paper. He said, Be Militant.
Chief, did you say...
It's The Militant.
Did you say he was holding the paper?
Social Worker Party, the Trotskyite Party.
Well, you also said that he was at Present Arms. Well, could you describe the picture in detail? What he looked... Was he holding at Present Arms with the paper that...
No, the paper he was holding in this hand up like this, I believe it was his left hand.
He had a gun like this, crossed this way on his body, and holding the papers up like this with this hand.
So he was holding the stock of the rifle with one hand and the paper up like that?
Holding rifle in his right hand and the papers
paper
in his left
hand. I don't know. Why don't you show us a picture?
The leak of the photo's content, before any forensic analysis or legal vetting, shaped public perception almost instantly. It shifted the conversation from investigation to confirmation, and from suspicion to certainty. The image wasn't just evidence, it was a symbol. And in the court of public opinion, symbols often speak louder than facts. The connection between Lee Harvey Oswald and the alleged murder weapons was quickly publicized as a major breakthrough. The backyard photographs showing Oswald with a rifle and revolver were presented as visual proof of guilt. Their release helped solidify public opinion that Oswald was the assassin, even before he had a chance to stand trial. Equally significant was the presence of radical left-wing literature in those photos. The inclusion of The Militant and The Worker wasn't incidental. It painted Oswald as a dangerous communist at a time when Cold War anxieties ran high. The image didn't just suggest that Oswald had the means to commit murder. It implied he had the ideological motive as well. Together, these elements created a powerful narrative. Oswald wasn't just a suspect. He was a political-driven killer, and that narrative hardened quickly, shaping public perception in the critical hours before Oswald himself was silenced. Then an episode in early 1964 revealed just how volatile and tightly controlled the narrative around Lee Harvey Oswald had become. Backyard photo 133A would appear on the February 21st, 1964 cover of Life magazine, essentially convicting Oswald in the minds of the American public. This photo appearing on the magazine was considered a breach of the Warren Commission's confidentiality protocols. The image showing Oswald with the rifle and revolver, allegedly used in the Kennedy and Tippit murders, was already controversial. Its sudden public circulation raised alarms. The FBI responded swiftly and aggressively, launching an investigation into how the press had obtained the photo. Resources were deployed across multiple cities, reflecting the seriousness with which the breach was viewed. According to FBI summary CE-1788, Dallas police officials, including Will Fritz, George Doherty, George Lumpkin, and Carl Day, acknowledged that multiple copies of the backyard photos had been made for investigative purposes immediately after the assassination. However, they denied any knowledge of how the images reached the media. Captain Fritz pointed to a report in the March 2nd edition of Newsweek, which claimed that Life magazine and other outlets had purchased the photo from representatives of Maureen Oswald. If true, this would suggest that the leak came not from law enforcement, but from within Oswald's own circle, adding another layer of complexity to the photo's journey from evidence to icon. This moment underscores how the backyard photos weren't just investigative tools. They were powerful symbols. Their release helped cement Oswald's image in the public mind as a radical, armed, and dangerous figure. But the circumstances of their dissemination also raises questions about control, narrative shaping, and the intersection of media and justice. Next time on The End of Innocence, the premise of the backyard photos being authentic relies on two things being true. One, that Lee Oswald owned the Imperial Reflex camera, and two, that Maureen Oswald took the backyard photos using the Imperial Reflex camera. We'll answer those questions next episode. We'll see you then. If you like what you hear every week and want to learn more about the assassination, please pick up my book, The End of Innocence, The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy. It's available right now on Amazon, or you can find it at www.endofinnocencejfk.com. In honor of the release of the JFK assassination records, I'm sending out signed copies of my book. If you would like one of these, please email me at endofinnocencejfk@gmail.com. The price is $40 for the soft cover and $60 for the hardcover, plus shipping and handling. I can promise you won't be disappointed in the book. It's an oversized coffee table style book. The book is over 500 pages with almost 1,000 pictures. You won't be disappointed. And hey, send me your comments about the book or this podcast at endofinnocencejfk@gmail.com.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.